This is Neostorm, and you're listening to the Fraggin' and Laggin' podcast.
Roll back that beautiful bean footage and you'll find it.
I can't hear a thing in the game. It's like, hey, there's a friend request! Hey, there's a friend request! Hey, there's a friend request!
Alright, this bastard is on my... Okay, GTFO, bitch.
Alright, everybody, here it comes. Sit back and enjoy the Fraggin' and Laggin' podcast. Hey everybody, what's going on? It's me, Bobby, or Junkhead. Call me whatever you want, as long as you call me your friend. And we're really excited about this episode. Thank you, each and every one of you guys and gals, or whatever you identify yourself as, for listening to the podcast, showing your support. And speaking of support, I could not do this podcast if it wasn't for the diva of Twitch, the diva of Instagram, TikTok, anything else out there, content creation, the homie, the Beast from Bruges, Joaquin Blaze. How you doing, buddy?
Hey man, how you doing? And welcome everybody. I always forget to say that. I just let you introduce and then I go like, hey, and the muscles from Florida, Junkhead.
There we go. So,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I'm actually really excited to, like, the guy that we're having on the show probably doesn't realize how excited I am to have him.
I would say schoolgirl, little schoolgirl in pigtails, yeah, excited.
Yeah. But it's also how you call it, reminiscing in the past, you know, H1Z1 time.
Greatest battle royale game ever. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The greatest battle royale game ever. The mother of them all. I'm gonna try introduce him, but I'm always insecure about doing this. But anyways, we're gonna try it. So. The guy that did almost everything on Tauntfest, if you know the show. The guy that always wore a cap and a hoodie. The guy that always smiled. The guy that always had something mysterious in his look. We got Neostorm, guys.
Yay! He made it!
Yay!
I wasn't talking about Neostorm, I was talking about Blaze. You did a good job, okay. Blaze. I'm just trying to build your combo. Welcome, Neostorm, to the podcast.
I was checking my DMs how many times I wrote him to get a Twin Galaxy hoodie. Luckily, it was only once. I'm not ashamed this time.
You, Neo,
listen.
I remember how hard people were, like, sorry to say, but hunting for the white or the black Twin Galaxy hoodie for the game, because it was so rare and it just, it was one of the attraction points on the show that people could win them, you know, by doing certain contests. And I think you guys must have been, it's always a question I wanted to ask you guys, you must have been spammed by people and your best friends to get those hoodies.
It never ends, even till this day. I'll check my Twitter or my social media. Even if I'm like playing a game and somebody recognizes me, that's like one of the first things they ask is like, can I have a code? I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have any codes.
See, I think you should consider yourself very lucky that you answered Blaze right away, because Blaze is kind of a stalker. And I've said, hey, man, you got to back off a little bit. And he's like, no, 15 DMs later.
I was already stalking Neostorm to come on season one, believe me. And it just didn't match with the time schedules and some other stuff. But hey, we got him now. So
dude,
I'm really excited about it.
Very, very excited. So, because H1Z1 was the game that got me into PC gaming. And it's like one of those things that will... I think to a lot of people that played that game, it holds a special place in their heart. So having someone here to give us...
It's a very unique game. It definitely hits these feelings that for a lot of people that don't know video games, they can see H1Z1 and then just recognize what's going on. It's not like if they were to see League of Legends and they never played video games before and they're watching this battle unfold in League of Legends, there's a lot of nuances that are going on the screen and they're having difficulty like actually figuring out what the heck is going on. But with H1Z1, there's a familiarity with it it makes sense, you know, when you die, you know, and there's this last man standing element to it. So I think it's a game that really it draws people in from all circles, whether you played video games or not. But I think it has that unique allure to it, you know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I cried a little bit there
You
when you were
see so.
describing it. Because I got into it late, especially during the competitive side, because I was an esports manager for Apotheon. So I was like, I can't manage these guys if I don't know anything about the game. And immediately, it was the one game that I think I've ever played is that you, even though you are bad at the game, you wanted to keep playing. You were jumping right back in the game no matter what. So, whew. So it's an, I
Yeah,
think it's
like
emotional for a lot of people, you know.
it always strikes me that it took me 3 months to get my first win. It took me 3 months of
Three
grinding.
months?
Yeah, 3 months, dude.
You're
Three
a
months.
bot, dude.
Holy.
You
But
are horrible.
Wow, 3 months. I would have never guessed.
you gotta know, I played FIFA for years and that kind of, and sports games a lot, and I came from CSGO, yeah, CSGO. And then I jumped onto H1Z1. So, you know, CSGO was already pretty new for me, but like I never played Call of Duties or anything of those kind of games back in the day. So I was more playing like sports game and Mario and all those kind of games. So for me, it was totally new, and it attracted me so hard to be the last one standing. And I choked so many times and you know, like the last two players or the last three players that, you know, it became annoying at some point. And I kind of felt Tim the Tatman with Fall Guys, you know? But in the end,
Yeah.
I managed, and then the wins just kept coming. And in the end,
Cool.
I was playing jokes. Like I had the, you know, the, what's he, what was his name? The photographer guy on Twitter that never wanted to have a win, but always was second place with zero kills.
Oh, I think his name was I'm photographer or
Yeah,
something.
I'm photographer, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
And
photographer, right?
I had like this little thing going on with him that I said to him, I'll have a zero kill win. And at some point I was like really grinding that in my streams, and at some point it worked. I had two guys kill each other in the gas, and I was the last one standing with zero kills, and that was an achievement for, you know, because it was so hard to get
You
that.
always remember your first win in H1Z1. I'm pretty sure everyone remembers their first win in
Honest,
H1Z1 because it's that like epic when you finally get it. It's like
it was it for me. It was at night. Plus, I yelled so hard. I was yelling so hard in my stream that my neighbors downstairs called the cops on me.
Should have, man. They
I'll
should
never
have.
forget. They did actually. I will never forget. They did call the cops on me. Like 30 minutes later, my stream was like, "Oh, somebody's at my door. It's 1 a.m. at night. What the fuck?" I opened the
Oh
door
no.
and the cops were like, "Can you keep it down?" I was like, "Yeah, but I got my first Battle Royale win." And they were young guys and they understood and they were like, "Yeah, okay, but from now on, keep it down." So I'll never forget it.
I mean,
Save. Oh my
my
goodness.
first win I brought it, I played with the H1Z1 Pro team from Apotheon. I mean, I never got a solo win, but my win came with the team like in 2 weeks. I was like, what does this thing do? And they're like, just this, you're gonna die, just we got this. And I was like, sweet. But never did get a solo win, so I didn't have that luxury. I'm a Plat 2 guy. Plat 2.
As a so I, you gave your team a massage afterward for all the
Oh,
carrying
yes.
they did.
Yeah, because I was the team manager, so, you know, they got perks on the back end, you know, but, you
Nice,
know.
nice.
Well, let me ask you this, both you guys here. How many hours, Blaze, did you have in the game?
I gotta check. I think around 3,000 or something. But I
Neo?
think Neo Storms has like double.
Well, I let me look right now because I have to do a little bit of math because they split the game into two games at a certain point, and then my hours got split across the two games. So they split it to just survive. So it was weird. See, I had just survive. I have 1,000, and in H1 or Z1 Battle Royale, I have Almost 6,000. So almost 7,000 total. Yeah. That's, I know players were more than that, but yeah, it's a pretty big number. I have bigger in other games.
I remember how good Neostorm was at the game, you know? So, like, you, in Thoughtfest, you had, like, this little game you had where you had a guest and they had to try to survive as long as possible, right? And people had to guess how which placement they would have, and that was really fun.
Yeah,
I think once you were on it as well, doing the like that people could guess how long you could stay alive, if I'm right.
Yeah, well, let's see. The Thoughtfest originally started because Jace Paul and, well, you know what? Let me tell you a story.
Oh,
yeah, go ahead. We're ready.
Let's get into the first win, because I think, you know, we started off talking about our first wins and I didn't get to tell you mine. But it actually leads into what we're talking about now with the Thoughtfest. So with my first win, when I first got into the Battle Royale mode for H1Z1, I remember trying it out, and I had been playing H1Z1, the regular mode, for at least a few months. And I didn't really want to try the Battle Royale because I felt like this is not the real game. I didn't know much about it. And I didn't watch anybody do it. I just knew the mode was there, and it was a quick thing. It wasn't like you build a base, and it was progressive. It didn't feel like a persistent world, etc. So I didn't want to give it a try, but I gave it a shot. And I remember parachuting in my first game, and just the parachuting in I had never experienced before. And that was like exhilarating, just going in, and then you see a sea of other parachutes next to you, and everyone's just flying in, and you're going down. And I remember the first place I landed was the Pleasant Valley suburbs. I don't know if you remember that area.
Yeah.
Of course
we called it. We called it the boot because of the shape of the streets. And that was my first landing spot. And as soon as I landed, all I would hear was machine gun fire. And that wasn't like normal mode. Where normal mode, you really rarely heard any rifles and machine gun fire because bullets were so scarce, guns were so scarce. The only time you really heard that stuff when there was a base battle. And so as soon as I land, I'm hearing gunfire left and right. I'm seeing the kill feed on the side of my screen just spamming with deaths. And I'm like, what in the world is going on here? And it was just like this nonstop adrenaline run from the beginning of that match to the end of it, where I was just like constantly afraid, constantly pumped. I just got to try to survive somehow. I didn't end up winning that match, of course. I ended up getting destroyed pretty quickly, but I immediately wanted to continue. I just, like you were saying earlier, like even though you lost, like you just wanted to jump right back into it. And so I had to tell everyone else at the office about the mode. Like, we had all been playing H1Z1 for months. You know, we've been playing H1Z1 from the beta before anyone even, like, it was released to anybody, you know? And so, you know, we were friends with Daybreak and everything. But they had never really expressed to us, you should try this mode out and stuff. So I had expressed it to the team. I was like, guys, you got to try this. And I told Jace Hall. Jace Hall had been playing the normal mode a lot too, but he had never tried the Battle Royale. And he was a little reluctant to trying it because of the same reasons I had. Like, you know, it wasn't a persistent world, yada yada. And one day he came in, we had this area, it was a computer room or a gaming room, and this is where eventually the Thoughtfest contestants would play. It was an eight computer like LAN room, a gaming LAN room. And Jace Hall had come in there, and I had just started playing a map or a match on the Battle Royale mode, and he was watching from the side, and he was watching me do it. and he's watching me play, and I was like, you know, I got killed. It was fun. He enjoyed watching it, and he left. Came back later on in the day and started to play it himself, and he tried it. And just like me, he wanted to continue playing it. It was that exciting. At that point, I don't know who brought it up first, but there was always smack talk there at the office, right? We always had competitiveness when it came to other games. All the other games that we played, we were always competitive on. And I have stories about that too. But for this one in particular, I think maybe Jace brought it up. It might have been me. We were saying one night, like, all right, well, who's going to be the first one at the office to get the first win? Right? And it became a thing where, okay, let's see who's going to be the first one to actually get a chicken dinner. And I remember playing for, I think it was 7 or 8 days until something had happened. Or it might have been 4 days, actually. So Jason and I were playing pretty much back to back or side to side in the office every day, trying to get our first win for like 4 days passed already. And Kyle Fox, which is Rick Fox's son, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar. If you guys watch the show, you probably you probably recognize Kyle. Well, Kyle was in on it too, but he wasn't going as hard as Jace and I. He had only played one or two. Actually, at the time, I think he only played once. And on his second game, on the fourth day of Jason and I playing, he was playing next to us. And I remember watching him play in the corner of my eye while I was on another match. And he was down to like five or six people left in the match. And I was like, oh, wow, he's getting close. And he hid in a bush. And everyone else was killing each other. It was down to three people. He's still hiding in the bush. The gas circle is like almost closing fully on this small area. We couldn't tell where the other people were because he wasn't leaving that bush. All we knew was like, this is coming down to the wire. And we're like, Jason and I are like watching Kyle play this. And he stood in the bush. Next thing you know, like, it was like the gas is going to come and push him out the bush. It's going to be over. And there's nowhere else for the gas to go after that point. So he's going to have to fight. And that what ended up happening was the other two guys ended up killing each other. Somehow they just double KO'd and he won the match. Maybe like they fought in the gas and they both died that way. I'm not sure, but he ended up winning. Zero kills, and his second game ever, and Jason and I were just like, oh my god. And from that point, like, it was like, okay, now Kyle has bragging rights in the office. He can talk the smack all day, and we can't say nothing to him. It was terrible. I would say like a couple days later, I got my first win, and then Jace got his first win. Like, I think the same day, like a few hours later after I got my first win. But it was that crazy. Like, we were like, oh, you know how hard I tried every time I played to win for days, and I'm talking about like playing from like for hours, right? And this is Kyle's second game, and I'm like, oh my god, this is. And he was just like rubbing in. He was like, well, who's the best? Who's the best in H1? I was like, oh my god.
But it's like he pulled the early Fortnite strat. He was the creator of the Fortnite strat. I'm just going to camp in the bush. Camp in the bush, catch a dub.
Oh my god.
Yeah, back then, the bushes in the Z1 version of the game were very hard to detect people in. They were like, if you hit in a bush, you could almost like not be seen Unless somebody walked right by you. They changed that after, like, because it was, the bush captain was just, like, it got too broken, so they eventually changed it so you can see people in bushes. But, like, back then, you really, especially from a far distance, somebody could just snipe you from a bush, and you won't know where it came from.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I know, like, you touched on, let me ask you, Blaze, where was the very first game that you played of H1? Where do you remember where you landed at your very first game?
It was what's it called again? I gotta look for a second.
Oh my god, this guy! I'm sorry, like
what's
you
it
have
a city, a town, I like any.
Oh, no, it was full on city.
Cranberry.
Pleasant Valley. Been... Yeah, no, it was Pleasant Valley.
PV?
For sure.
How could you forget PV? Gosh, you.
I'm sorry. No, I
I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed. Neo, I apologize for him.
Actually, one of my favorite places to land in the beginning was Pleasant Valley because I remember talking with Volky and I think with Crooklyn Cat, and they told me you just gotta learn to fight, dude. Just drop in the city where everybody drops and just learn to survive. And I remember I landed, I died. It just kept on going, but I never wanted to give up, you know, till you get your first skill, you know, and then you just keep on going. And I remember Ranchito was also a nice place to drop. I always like dropping there as well. So, yeah.
I remember I was like Neo. I didn't understand the parachuting mechanism and how to work. I remember was it iPhone, and then the West you had Strip Mall, right? And then you had that church. I remember I landed at that church. And I was
iPhone was on the right, right? That was the was that game? Was that
Game
Boy?
Yeah, it was on
no.
the right.
Yeah, right.
Was it the Game Boy
the
or
church,
iPhone?
It was on the right of the church.
I think we called that Game Boy on.
And see, I was just like.
I mean, some people called it iPad, iPhone.
I think we called it Game Boy when we played, and I also really liked actually.
Yes,
landing.
Game Boy. Depending on how old you are, it shows the side of your age, right? It's like
or ColecoVision.
You know, Gen Zs are not growing up with Game Boys. You know, like
yeah.
3DSs and stuff.
But like later. After a while, I started landing a lot in Cranberry. I really liked Cranberry.
I was a big Cranberry guy. That and I don't know, like because like I made the mistake at first when I.
Pine.
Because I was afraid to like get into early gunfights, but what I didn't realize is that that's the best time to get into them, you know, like you're on level playing ground and stuff, and you know, by the time you run into somebody, they're, you know, they're fully lammied out, you know, and I was like, yeah, I don't stand a chance with this pistol, you know, this sucks.
Well, the thing is, when I talk with people that with who I'm playing Warzone now, for example, that never played H1Z1, and I try to explain to them how hard the game was, they almost cannot catch it because I'm telling them it was two shots and you were dead, and there was no buyback, guys. Like if you were playing squads and your teammates died, you were the only one left, and you had to be able to survive till the end to win the game, and if you died early, you were obligated to watch your teammates play the whole game through, you know? Sometimes you were just sitting there for 10, 15, 20 minutes seeing them play while you died in the beginning. So, and what I really liked about the game was, you know, you had all the bullet drop and the spray patterns, and it felt so much more realistic in a way because if you died, you died. And that was it, you know? That's why I loved the game so much. That it was like a hardcore battle royale from the beginning. That's why I call it the mother of all battle royales, you know?
Yeah, you definitely had a sense of like mortality in the game. It always, I think it gives you like produces this chemical in your brain, you know, you don't normally produce when you play a lot of games, because like a lot of games you'll play and there's an expectation where it's going to be okay after you die. And not every game is like this, but a lot of games are like that. And so there's less adrenaline pumping. And now it depends. If you're being really competitive in the game and you're trying to go for a score or, you know, no death run or stuff like that, it's different. But like most games, like, you know, you're kind of chill. But in a game like H1 where, you know, you can get two tap, like you were saying, two shots and you're dead. It's like there's this constant fear. Even if you're like in a battle and you're doing pretty well, there's still this subliminal subconscious fear. You could just die in an instant. You can get third party while fighting, you know, like somebody could just get a lucky two tap. You know, the planes are flying over, bombs are coming down. You don't know where they're going to land because back in the day, they didn't show you shadows. It's like, okay, I don't know. Where are these bombs going to land? You just died like that. There's always these things that can just... The gas is, like, you know, brutal, and you're just trying to survive in the game.
Yeah,
so
it's like
the adrenaline love, the adrenaline rush is, like... And whatever chemicals are being produced is, like, you know... You get that sensation in H1 that you don't get in most battle. Like you were saying, you can get a buyback in Call of Duty. That's a little, like, lenient, right? Like, hey, you get another chance, guys. Like
You're like, oh, I got 20 kills. Oh, yeah, but I got bought back 6 times. You know, like, it's different than you would say on H1Z1, I got a fucking 20-kill win, you know, or 25-kill win, because then you know... That guy never died the whole game and killed 25 guys along the way. That was really hardcore in my eyes, you know?
Yeah, you got a 25. You know, what's really rough is getting like a 25 kill second place.
Oh, like, yeah. And the person that kills you, that's their only kill that they get, you know?
Well, but that's like, to rub it in, right? Usually that's me.
But that sensation you were talking about that you said, that fear... I can relate to that because when I played the H1Z1 Invitational back in 2017, it was my first big real competition, and it was on stage, and the stadium was filled with people. There was a shit ton of people watching on Twitch, and the first game I died because I was in the open and I got shot by two guys at the same time, and I just bleeded out because I couldn't get cover to bandage up. And I said to myself, the second game, I'm going to go for placement and go for kills at the end. And I get into this fight with Hiko, and I tap off his helmet, and I know he's low, but he also like taps off my armor. And I'm so scared of dying that I decide, like, okay, I got him hurt, but I'll jump in my car and drive away. And that saved him, because if I would have thrown my Molotov that I had, he would have died. But I drive off, I zigzag with my car, and he one taps me in the head. You know, I'm like, oh my God, or two taps me in the head.
You didn't have a helmet? Oh, he tapped you off the car? Oh, yo, no, that's
you
rough.
You hear me in the feed of the tournament, because I got the images later. You hear me in the feed go like, oh no, Hiko. But I was like, I knew I made a mistake there, but like in that game, if you made one wrong move or one wrong thought, you died. And in so many other battle royales that I played after, even PUBG, they were more forgiving, you know? And that's what I keep missing in a lot of battle royales that come out now, or battle royale type games. You don't have that fear anymore of dying immediately. You know, you're like hot drop in Warzone, and well, if your whole team dies, whatever, we'll go to the gulag and hope a few of us gets out and we'll buy each other back, and you know. But like that fear of dying, or like a car with four people in it rolling up on you and like destroying you, you know, like you always think like, I can get bought back, you know, like I do miss that feeling.
Yeah, I like when Fortnite came out. I remember when the beta was available, and I started playing it. And this was like before anyone really knew how to crank 90s, right? This is like basic ramps were the pinnacle of building. You know, like I would see Ninja playing Fortnite on Twitch. And he's just building basic ramps. And this is like beating people. Like, this is the strat back then, you know? You would build a ramp and
I remember.
Overpower somebody before they could build a ramp and fight you back. And like Ninja was destroying people with the strat. And this is like beginning of the building strats, right? And I remember playing it myself, trying to like perfect this this ramp strat. And like I just couldn't like get over. Okay, like you were saying, like I would fight somebody, get them low, and then they would wall themselves in, or box themselves in, and I would try to like go for the kill because I knew I had them low. I just need to finish them off. I would try to break down the walls, like, and then by the time I'm able to like fight them, I have no builds, like nothing, no defenses. And they outramp me, and then I just get killed eventually because I just was focusing on the kill and not building. And I could never like get my mind into building and doing this kind of build war with them. It was always like I just want to kill them, you know. And I would just run out there, and sometimes don't have any builds at all, or any walls, nothing. And it's like, oh, I just couldn't get used to it. I just wanted to fight. And for that reason, I couldn't get into Fortnite, and I never really tried to master it at all. I just went back to H1 because, you know, H1 was still up at the time.
I had the same feelings as you had with that, because I remember I played the first two or three seasons of Fortnite when the building wasn't the big thing. You know, you build your little ramp to protect yourself a little bit, and you shot people and you sniped people, and I did like that. But like there was a point where Fortnite started to become more popular and everybody started building those castles, like I call them. And what happened, like when
castles
I
live in the sky.
Yeah. What happened was when I started shooting, like you saw a dude running around the map and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to headshot him. You know, you're like still thinking H1Z1 style. So you shoot at him, you hit him and he goes down pretty low. And then suddenly you see this castle raising to the sky and you're like, okay, I'm out. And I did that in my stream many times, like I'm out, and I turned around and walked the other way of the map, and the guy was probably looking for me, but I was long gone by the time he finished building his castle with his like princesses and everything in there. But it was nothing for me, and that's, you know, I that's why I never 100% got on Fortnite totally, you know. It just bored me at a moment because it never felt like H1 felt, you know. So yeah,
and you know, another thing about H1 that I love that I think doesn't get enough praise or recognition is actually the vehicles, the vehicle control, like the way the cars feel and drive, and the way you can drift with them, and like they designed that engine so well for vehicles. I don't know another BR that has vehicles that drive as well as H1. I can't say Call of Duty has the best vehicle driving. Definitely not PUBG. Definitely not Fortnite. But yeah, like the driving in H1 is just, there's something about it. It's just so perfect. I don't know. I love the way it feels. It got better over time, but like even in the past, it was good. Even when you could drive upside down, it was fun.
Well, now that we're talking about driving, oh my God. So my very first game, I'm going to tell you my first three games of H1Z1. So I landed church, and I then, because I couldn't drive or I was afraid to drive, so I force gumped it to PV, right? So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to drive this car. As soon as I get in, I get two-tapped by Bizarre, the H1Z1 Pro. And I was like, well, that sucked. My second game, I was like, I'm going right to PV. I jump in a car, I flip it upside down, and Huskers kills me my second game. My third game, I go back to PV. Guess who kills me? Fucking Bizarre. Those are my first three games in H1Z1. I knew these guys because of esports management and H1 pro scene, but I was like, man, this sucks. And it made you want to get better. And like the touch, like what you were saying is like the game, you were tense the whole time. You know, it's tough. You're like, oh, I'm relaxed and stuff, because like there's that moment when you hear the gas siren going off and you hear the boom, boom. And I was like, oh shit, now I got to fucking run, you know, or I got to drive somewhere. So it's just, I think that game It has the one thing that I wish every game had was proximity chat. Then I'm kind of glad that it doesn't, because I play Fortnite because I play with my family. I probably would be banned if they I had proximity chat. So many little kids would have their feelings hurt.
That's a feature we all love to have, but also devs would probably hate to have. Investors probably would hate to have, because, you know, people get away with a lot of things on the internet, you know? And
how many times were you called a cheater through proximity chat?
Quite a few, actually, but it was mostly through prox chat. People would complain about my gameplay style and how I would fight them, because a lot of times in H1, people want to do the AR versus AR. Maybe you're behind a rock or you guys are behind rocks or behind trees, and you guys just shoot it out until somebody just eventually runs out of helmets, right? That's usually what people are expecting in H1Z1. I don't know why. I think that's a horrible thing to expect in H1. I think it gets you killed more often than not. But that's kind of what people expect to happen. I don't know. Maybe they came from the combat zone thinking this. But I don't fight that way. I always try to fight in a way that puts myself in a possibility of winning, no matter what tactic I'm gonna use. And if I feel like a better tactic is to like throw a Molotov or shoot an explosive arrow, maybe rotate and find a different position to shoot you in, and maybe you didn't see me rotating, and then I just like two tap you without you knowing. All of these strategies kind of seem unfair to some players or not sportsmanlike, but I don't care. Like, I will fight you in the most unsportsmanlike manner if it means I'm going to win.
I'm going to pull your hair.
Videos. I have so many clips that I don't have on the internet because there's just people being very obscene. But I save these things and I watch these things with my friends sometimes because we just laugh. But like, yeah, people will get so upset and say, you know, how do you fight that way? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, I'm winning. That's what I'm doing. Like, I got a chicken dinner. That's what I'm doing. But yeah, people get pissed. They get pissed at that. So not much cheating. But it's mostly like, how do you kill me like that? You suck. You're trash.
You're trash.
Like, what
kid.
Do you mean?
You're trash.
You're on the ground telling me I'm trash. I'm walking away from with the chicken leg in my mouth, and I'm trash.
I'm gonna ask you: did you ever kill Lyndon? And he starts yelling at you because Lyndon was epic at yelling at people.
I don't think I've ever killed Lyndon. I think I've been killed by Lyndon. Because I remember one time I was in a match and I didn't know he was in that match. And whenever Lyndon would play and he's streaming, he's getting stream sniped. This is like a never ending recurring thing with Lyndon. He cannot play the game normally. He can't. If he jumps in a match, he's going to get stream sniped. And so I'm just this is in Pleasant Valley, the Z2 map arena. And I'm going into Pleasant Valley to try and get some gear. I run into the sports store, and Lyndon just happened to be in there. And there's all these other guys coming, rushing into the sports store after I get in there. And I'm seeing like guys just run past me. And I'm trying to shoot these guys, like, what the heck is going on? And then I turn the corner, and then I get shotgun blast by Lyndon because I didn't know they were all like rushing in there to kill him, and I'm rushing past one guy that passed me to kill this guy, and then I get killed by Lyndon on the side. But yeah, I was like, what the heck? This actually was my first experience with stream sniping too. This is before the Taunt Fest even came out, and I remember being killed in that match. But yeah, like, that's the only time I actually fought. I wouldn't say against Lyndon because I didn't even know he was there, but like, yeah, he destroyed me before I could even fight him.
Yeah, I think the one guy, because we're both in Florida, that I always was like, and that's the one thing I loved about, because you could see who's in the map, you know, like, not see, like, you start, when the kill feed lights up, you're like, oh shit, was always Aladdin. I was like, always in the same matches with Aladdin. I was like, I'm going to get Aladdin one of these times. I'm going to get him. I'm going to get him. I never did. He annihilated me.
You're still trying.
No, so, but you know, no, it's still, it's like, and it was always cool. And, I mean, I thought all the good pros, and I think the worst experience I had was, I mean, the highest I ever got was plat 2, and you know, I was a bot. That's fine. I was a bot, but I had fun playing the game, 'cause it made me want to get better. Is I learned it from watching, I think it was T-Hump, and I love T-Hump. His streams were the best in H1. But the guy, I shot the guy's foot and killed him because I watched him. I was like, oh, dude, his foot's showing. I want to shoot and kill, and it's a shitty way to get a kill.
Nice.
But I was like, yeah. And the person goes, you're trash. You're garbage. You cheated. I was like, dude, you're fucking royalty, and I'm a fucking plat 2. I am not fucking cheat. If I was cheating, I'd be up there, you know. I would be rocking that royalty fucking logo, you know. But I was like, dude, man, I just got lucky. Yeah, shot your fucking foot, man, multiple times.
You know, the foot thing, I don't think many people realized it back in the day. It became more of a thing later on, but definitely I could see somebody thinking that you cheated if they got shot in the foot, especially back when they didn't realize that your feet were exposed on certain parts of the map. But yeah, like that would be that's so like, funny, getting people in the feet.
And I was like, I'm gonna try this, dude, because like, you know, you get people in the car, and you, if they get in cars, you're like, I was done for, you know, like, oh, there's a car, wait, never mind, someone's driving it, you know. Or Or you see the guys, like, I remember I was chasing one guy. Well, he was in a car. We're running to the circle was closing, and he drove across a fucking road, and all I seen was a fucking, that was my first bio bomb experience. All I seen was this thing just blew up, and I was like, what the fuck was that? Then the guy killed me, goes, bio bomb. And I was like, oh, okay. Don't even want to know. So... oh, the old gas can trip.
I mean, remember when you would go and sit in the back of a spawned car, just waiting with your shotgun for one guy to walk in and just shoot him in the head? The rage you got for doing that every time. I remember Lyndon doing that and just sitting there. That was just so funny.
Yeah, I remember doing that in the original Z1 map, right next to the police station in Pleasant Valley. I remember landing there, grabbing a shotgun in the armory of the police station, running back out into the cop car that was outside, jumping in the back seat, and just waiting, because this was the beginning of the match, and like that cop car is pretty much a hot commodity there. And I remember killing somebody like that. I just sat back there, didn't move. They jumped in, boom, right away.
Dude, that's like
so epic.
That's like turn your piece. When that would happen, like you said, that was like gold, that cop car. You're like, and if that would hit me, I'd be like, hey, man, all right, thanks. Turn my PC off. Have a great day. I'd be like, I'm shutting it down. Today's over. Tomorrow's a new day. So, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think I'm curious, Neostorm. How did it all started for you with gaming and you know, getting involved with Twin Galaxies and everything? How did that go, actually? Because I don't know if everybody knows that story about you, you know?
Wow. All right. Well, that's a pretty hefty story or question. Let me see. Let's break this down into two parts. How I got into gaming. Let's see. I've been gaming since 1981. And the first game that I ever played was Pac-Man on the Atari 2600. I remember when this game came out, I think I was 4 You know, you can get a sense of my age here, but I think it was between four and five years old. And my family, like my parents, my uncle, my aunt, we all lived near in proximity. And I'm not sure, I think it was my uncle who bought this machine. And we had all gathered at my uncle's house to experience this. This is the first time all of us had ever experienced a video game at all. And I remember them popping in this cartridge, turning on the television set, and this thing on the screen would just go across eating dots. And I was amazed. I was amazed by this. It fully captivated me, and I wanted to play it. And I didn't really get a chance to play it because I was young, and I guess, you know, my family was all playing it and hogging up the machine. But I had always wanted to play the game, and I had begged my parents for an Atari. I didn't actually end up getting an Atari, but that Christmas of the same year, I ended up getting a Commodore 64 instead, which was a computer by Commodore at the time. It could also play games, but I remember when I opened the gift on Christmas, I saw like a keyboard, you know, and I thought like work, business, you know, this kind of thing. I didn't realize there was gaming involved, and I was so depressed. I remember getting this thing thinking, all my friends have an Atari. I got this computer. Oh, no, that kind of thing. But it was actually a godsend, and I thank my parents tremendously for deciding on the Commodore 64, because I had to learn how to use it. I had to learn how to program on it, just basic stuff. And then I figured out that there was games that I can get for it. And the games for the Commodore 64 had better graphics and better sound than they did on the Atari 2600. They looked way better. Even Pac-Man, when I finally got Pac-Man on the Commodore 64, it looked just like the arcade version. And so I was really happy at that point and excited. I learned a lot from it. You know, computer programming, I guess, started for me back then because I started to learn to program on the 64 language. So I think from then, like, I started to just keep playing games. My aspiration for gaming grew and grew. You know, from that point, I got into the Nintendo, the Genesis, you know, and it goes on from there. My first actual LAN, well, it wasn't a LAN, but my first esports event, let's say, this was in 1990. It was the Nintendo World Championships in New York, the Jacob Javits Center. I don't know if you guys remember this because you guys are around my age a little bit. But do you guys remember that? It was a Nintendo Power, the Nintendo World Championships in 1990.
Not at all, because I was in the EU, so in the EU we had other stuff going on back then, but yeah, like the stuff from the US didn't cross over all the time back then, you know, not like it does now.
There were many, if any, other esports events or gaming events at all. I think there was That's Incredible from like the early 80s. I think that was probably the first esports event. It was televised.
Okay, I know That's Incredible. I remember that one.
Yeah. But this is the first one that I was involved in. And it was three games. It was Tetris, well, Super Mario Brothers, Rad Racer, and Tetris. And they put them all into one cartridge. And you started the game by playing Super Mario Brothers. It played the first map. And when you beat the first map, it went straight into Rad Racer. And then you played the first race in Rad Racer. And when you beat that, it went straight into Tetris. And then from Tetris, it was all score based at that point. It was a timer at the end, and at the very end of the timer, the game ended, and then your total score would be displayed. And so I had practice at home going into this, and I felt pretty confident in everything except for Tetris, because Tetris could just be RNG based. And I wasn't the best at Tetris, but I felt like I had perfected the first map in Super Mario where I started running and I never stopped, right? Like, there was no, like, stopping to hit a one-up or whatever. It was just run, jump, run, like, hit everything, never stop your momentum, right? So I was perfect that. Rad Racer, the same thing. First match, don't bump into any cars, do the race perfectly. Did that. Tetris, a little bit of worry. Went to the tournament and ended up top 80. I think, you know, at this time I'm only like, you know, 11 or 12 years old. I can't remember. And then like top 8, I get up to like the main stage and everything. I ended up losing in the top 8. And it was because Tetris. I couldn't keep up with everybody else in the top 8. I just wasn't good enough. I did Super Mario Perfect. Everyone else did Super Mario Perfect. I did Rad Racer first map perfect. Everyone else did it perfect. But yeah, Tetris, it wasn't good enough. So that was my first experience with a tournament. After that, I just continued playing games. I got into Doom. I don't know if you guys remember the first Doom.
I do, and I remember you wearing Caps of Doom on the show of Dauntfest as well, so I'm pretty sure the game left a good impression on you.
you remember my Doom cap? Cool.
Yeah, I do.
Nice. Yeah. So I got into Doom pretty hard when it came out in the early 90s. And there was a service called Dwango, where I think it was invented by the people at ID or id Software, but it may have not. I'm not sure, but it definitely encompassed their games. And it was a dial-up service where you dialed into a server using your dial-up modem, and the servers were spread out around the country. I was on the East Coast at the time, and in the tri-state area, which is New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. And I got into that server of the Dwango thing. And Dwango consisted of Doom, Doom 2, Heretic, and Hexen at the time. And so I got into that, and that was my first experience playing multiplayer online gaming. You know, this is before the internet was accessible and games had TCP/IP connections. This is like the only things games had at the time were no modem, direct connections. And so I got into playing Doom competitively from that. And the first Doom tournament, id Software's Deathmatch 95, was what they called it, came out. I got into that. And on the Dwango system, they had the tournaments run on those things, and I got to the top 2 in the tri-state area, but I ended up losing to my friend, who by one frag.
To your ex-friend. Ex-friend now.
Yeah, it was my friend. He was my friend. Ex-friend because separate issue. We just kind of like went our, you know, separate ways over time. You know, it wasn't anything serious or anything related to that. But yeah, he ended up beating me by one frag. He had an upper hand though. He had mastered using the mouse, and I didn't have a mouse. So if you could think back then, using a mouse was like, wow, you got a mouse, dude? That's awesome. You know, like having a mouse was like a luxury. And you play Doom with the keyboard. That's it. You turn with A, you know, A and D. You move forward W and S. You know, you fired with you know, the enter key or whatever key you set up on your keyboard. That's how you play Doom back then. And so, yeah, like, he had slightly an upper hand with the mouse because he could turn faster and aim better, more precise. But, yeah, you know, I had to learn the mouse. I didn't have a mouse at the time. But I did play second in the tri-state area, and I think that was a pretty big thing for me at the time, at least. And then after that, I just, you know, kept playing more first-person shooters. That really got me into first-person shooters. Quake came out, Quake 2, Half-Life came out. I seriously got into Half-Life. And I remember playing Half-Life so much. There was a website, I don't think it was called the CPL. It might have been called something else, but there was a website that tracked who was getting, like, it had a stat spreadsheet for all the, like, players who had the most kills or had the most wins in a day, etc. So, like, I would just try to, like, grind the Half-Life deathmatch to try and place on that board. And I remember there was at one point out of 2 million players who were playing Half-Life Deathmatch across the world, I was ranked 19 in kills.
Damn.
The problem, though, here's what happened, and this is my first experience with this, too, is I was playing nonstop from wake up to sleep. Maybe some food in there, thrown in there somewhere. Maybe not. Like, a lot of times I would play games and forget about eating. Every day I was doing this until a point where my wrist started to hurt. And I developed a mild case of carpal tunnel from playing that much. And it, you know, honestly, it had to do with my setup. It had to do with my chair, my desk, the way I was sitting, the way I was holding the keyboard and the mouse, and all of that had to do with it. I don't truly think it was because I was playing so hard. I think that just made it worse, but it had to do with my ergonomics, you know, my setup. But that was my first experience with that. It was scary. Like, it hurt. I had to stop playing for a few weeks. I had to take care of it. And I was young. I think it was like 18, maybe 17 at the time. And so, like, getting that at that age was scary. It's like, whoa, I'm not supposed to get this till I'm like 30 or 40. But yeah, I took care of it. I learned more about ergonomics and how to sit, play properly, etc. Never got a case of that again. Actually, not until like more recent times, but unrelated to gaming. But yeah, like, so that's how hard I went in Half-Life. Loved that game. I played a lot of MMOs when they started coming out, like Ultima Online, EverQuest, Dark Age of Camelot, like, you name it. Like, I was playing an MMO. And then I played a lot of Magic the Gathering. So I don't know if you guys know about Magic the Gathering. It's a card game.
Yeah, I know
Remember
of it.
The game. I never played it. By the way, did you ever play Duke Nukem as well?
I forgot about Duke Nukem. Yes.
Oh my God.
Never
Duke Nukem,
competitively
man.
Though.
No,
never,
but just for fun, never right? Just
for the single player. Like, yeah. It was so fun at the time, and I was young, so it's also like that humor really hit the spot there. I don't think Duke Nukem holds up, though. Like, in today's standards, I don't think it would even survive.
Yeah, true.
I don't even know if you could play that game on Twitch. It might be against TOS. I don't know.
Yeah, you might. Yeah. And you're banned instantly.
You might get flagged for that game. Maybe not, but, like, it was that kind of game. It was like, should I be allowed to play this? You know, I'm 16 years old, that kind of thing.
Okay, and another fun game back then, Carmageddon, one of the first games that you were able to drive with a car and you had knives on your car, and you were gutting people from the street randomly. You had all the blood splashing on your screen. That was even, you know, before Mortal Kombat and all that stuff. Can you remember that game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a... you were just running people over. It was just,
oh, my God. It was so brutal that our parents didn't even realize how brutal it was, you know? Like, I was like, I want to buy Carmageddon. And my dad was like, yeah, go and buy it, dude. Here's the money. You know? But he never realized till he saw the game and he was like, is that real blood? I'm like, yeah, I'm just killing those people. And what do you gain? Oh, I get bonus points for killing them. Oh, really? This is wrong. I think around that time they invented the, you know, the age restrictions on games. Or the warning.
I think Mortal Kombat was probably the first game that really caught the eye of the politicians.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I think it might have been something later. Maybe it was Doom. But I think Mortal Kombat was the first game that did that.
That's when
people were like, whoa, maybe we want to put some regulations on this stuff.
I mean, if you tell people that we come, like, they know we're boomers, like they call it now, or older, that when we talk about games not having age restriction or anything, and that blood was something really special to have in a game, you know?
Yeah, but I remember when they ported Mortal Kombat over to Super Nintendo, the blood was recolored. I think it might have been green? It either was green or blue. It either became like sweat or spit that you punched out of them, or like vomit. Like, that's so... I forget what they just recolored it to get away from like the blood.
I'm thinking about the color. If it was green, I'm really thinking about it.
Yeah, it was like either green or blue. I'm not sure, but I remember they recolored on the SNES. It did the same thing for Street Fighter too.
Yeah, it was green. It was green. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was green.
I looked it up. I cheated, but it was green.
Okay, I know it was one.
He's the cheater. He's the cheater in the bus.
But I mean, if you look back at the graphics from Mortal Kombat 1. Like nowadays, you would be like, you know, but I mean,
doesn't hold up well.
Liu Kang, Motaro. Who remembers Motaro? You remember Motaro?
Was it
the guy on the horse? You know, with the horns.
Yeah, Motaro.
Motaro. Yeah. But I mean, like when we talk about it, it's so crazy, and I'm happy to say I'm from the 80s because. I mean, we went through this whole evolution with Atari, with Commodore, to what it is now, and we can still know where it all comes from. Like, I remember the first mobile phone and playing Snake on the mobile phone. I remember playing Game Boy for hours and hours. I was playing Tetris on my Game Boy, you know, like simple games actually that made us really happy and grind actually. So it's crazy. It's nice to hear those, you know, when you're talking about it.
Yeah, I didn't even bring up all the arcade games.
That's where it was.
Kind of like a...
Go ahead,
arcades,
I'm sorry.
Is like a thing of the past, you know? It's like a... It's hard to explain to a Gen Z, like, the experience of an arcade room. Because they're just playing games from home now. But, you know, the whole experience of being at an arcade, it's... You can't get that from playing online. It's not the same.
Yeah,
it's not the same. It's
something about walking in there. Like, I remember, like, when I was in the military in Japan, like Mortal Kombat 2 on arcade was out, and you'd have the one guy that was the king of the game, putting your quarters up there, like, I got next, you know, because you wanted to dethrone that guy. Next, and the first time you beat him, then you get to be the man, you know? I was like, oh, good times.
That's it, you know, the thrill of, like, you got, like, 10, 20 guys in front of you playing, for example, Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. Like, one guy's playing and he's beating everybody and it's the next and it's almost your turn. And everybody's like, is this guy finally going to beat him or is this guy? Or you do, like, a move that you, like... looked up on a magazine or whatever that from the US for me, you know, like the US magazines were pretty rare back then in Europe. So if I was able to put my hands onto a US magazine with like, you know, a finish move or whatever that others couldn't do yet, and you did it, everybody's like, oh my God. And like the next day in school, people were like, oh my God, Joachim did, you know, that finish move, and he's not telling us how he did it. You know, like that's just, that sensation was amazing, you know?
Dude, I would be more pissed off, like, if someone hit me with the, like in Mortal Kombat 2, the babalities. When you hit somebody with that, it was like demoralizing. It's like a tea bag nowadays, man. Babality, you know, so.
Yeah, I think in the tournaments, right, that stuff is not, it's like considered BM, I think. Could be wrong, maybe it depends on the game. Like doing a fatality in a tournament, I think is a BM thing.
Oof.
Could be wrong. Correct me on this, but I kind of remember them, you know, not doing that stuff in tournaments to, you know, not BM the other player.
Kids, but everyone's
it's
sensitive.
Against the rules. Could be wrong, but like, yeah, it's a thing.
It's like that unspoken rule. Like, don't do it. It's not good, you know. So.
But you were talking about, where were you? Half-Life? Am I wrong? I don't know.
Yeah, but well, like, okay, so Counter-Strike came from Half-Life, and I remember getting into Counter-Strike Beta 1.2. That's how, it might have even been Beta 1.1, but I remember 1.2 more than 1.1. Yeah, that's when I started playing Counter-Strike. My favorite version was 1.6, I want to say. I think that might have been the last beta before they eventually made Counter-Strike Source. After
yeah,
that point...
1.6 was the last one. Yeah, yeah.
I remember being on a server. This was a Chicago server, too. Can't remember the name of the server. It was a bulletin board system. Or it was a PBB, online bulletin board, and they had a server for Counter-Strike, and it was very famous at the time. And this was like in the late 90s. And I would play on their servers pretty often, got friendly with them, and then I became a moderator for the server. And I would catch cheaters all the time. All the time, and it was like half of my job was like just booting cheaters out of the game, and eventually it got to the point where I just stopped playing. It was just too many cheaters, and like it wasn't always easy to tell who was cheating, who wasn't cheating, and I was like, I'm just done with this, and I just stopped playing Counter-Strike because that game was very, very brutal if you played against a cheater. Because a lot of, you know, Counter-Strike, Valorant, like, a lot of it is not knowing where the opponent is and anticipating where they would be. Like, you know, they would probably hide on this corner or sit on top of this box. You know, the bomb is being planted over here, so there's points where you think that the opponents will be, and you're checking those spots. If they can see you through the walls, there's no way you can get around it. Like, there's no outplay to that because they know exactly where you are. And a lot of the guns in those games shoot through most walls. So, you know, it's like, well, I got killed through a wall. You know, it was a cheater, you know. And it's like, well, it's hard to tell if it was a cheater or just a lucky shot because they knew that corner. People camp that corner all the time. The bomb is planted. They probably just shot through the wall there in hopes they will hit a target and they killed you. You know, maybe they were cheating, maybe they weren't. And it got to this point, it's like so hard to tell who was cheating or not. And I just didn't want to deal with it anymore. It was just too frustrating. So I had stopped playing Counter-Strike at that point. Even though, like, it was a great game and I loved it, I couldn't deal with the cheaters anymore. They just killed it for me. Killed it. So as far as first-person shooters, I kind of like slowed down during the early 2000s and focused more and more on MMOs. I had so much fun with that. When World of Warcraft came out, it was like nonstop World of Warcraft. person until like I kind of cut down in 2010. And let's see, let's fast forward a little bit, because you know there's so many games, right? There's so many games that I played, and I'm a multi-genre gamer. I don't just stick to one game. I'm not the kind of person that you'll ever hear say they're bored. The last time I said I was bored was probably when I was like 11 or 12 years old, and maybe I was on some school trip. I don't get bored easily. Even if I'm on a school trip, I'll probably open a book and give me a pen and I'll start making games on paper. Cause I started making games on paper since I was 8 years old.
Oh.
And you know, that's the thing that I do. And like, I just started designing games from like way back then. Before even people like knew what the hell is going on. I'm like writing, doing stages and maps and stuff like that. And on paper. Anyway, I can do that like in school, on a school trip, wherever. Like you'll find me like sitting there with a book, or a notebook. But anyway, to what I was saying, like I.
You were already fast forwarding from 2010 that you were, yeah, not the type of person.
I'm just saying, I'm not the type of person that you'll ever hear say they're bored. And I can find fun in most things, and there's, like, games everywhere. There's all kinds of games. There's always games coming out, and I'm always playing all kinds of games. So it's not just one game for me. Although you might like attach me or like say that, oh yeah, like he plays H1, right? But like that's just a game that I play. I play a ton of games. So fast forward like 2012, I want to say, I started competing in Magic the Gathering. And traveling around the country, going to tournaments, playing Magic, trying to, like, you know, I don't know, like, where I got this in my head that I could go pro, but, like, I saw somebody playing Magic on, it might have been Justin TV at the time. I don't think Twitch was available yet. I think they hadn't switched over to Twitch yet. So I think it was still Justin TV. I remember watching a Magic tournament there and seeing these guys play. And I was like, I don't know where this thought came into my head from. I was like, that could be me. I could be that person right there playing on the camera. And so, like, I remember going to the local comic book store in my area in the Bronx. And walking in there and, like, my first time saying, I want to play. And I just started playing with these guys, and I befriended a few of them. And a few of them went to tournaments every week, every weekend. And I just learned from these guys. And we just started to travel around the country together, just going to tournaments, playing. And I did win one tournament. It wasn't a major thing. It was a Grand Prix trial. And this is Dragon's Maze in Indianapolis. This was in 2013. Won that tournament, which gave me free entry to the Grand Prix. That's what that tournament was for. And you also got like a box of packs, and I got a, you know. So that was like I would consider it a money prize because you can sell the box for like 100 and something. But yeah, that was the first time I won a Magic tournament. So, so I was doing that at that point and thinking, you know, I want to do this Twitch thing or this Justin TV thing, this streaming thing. I want to get into that. And the local store I was going to, I was thinking maybe we could like put our games on camera. Wouldn't that be cool? You know, I had befriended the store owner and was in talks about how to do this. You know, throughout this whole time, I've been working in a career of IT, you know, fixing computers, breaking computers, hooking up networks, you know, migrations, all that kind of thing, right? And so I knew tech, and streaming was like relatively new at the time, but I was starting to understand it. And so I remember watching a stream, and I think Twitch had come out already by this time. By 2013, Twitch has already been available. I was watching a stream. I think it was a role-playing stream. And they were talking about another stream where they had multiple cameras set up. And you could click on the camera on the stream, and it'll change your view. It's still shooting the same room, but in a different angle. So I had to see this, because I was thinking, like, well, how do they do that? And that would actually be cool if I can incorporate that idea at the comic book store and have multiple cameras set up, each one viewing a different match, and then the viewer can change to which match they want to see if it was like a tournament, right? You can say, oh, I don't want to watch this match. I'll click over here, watch this other match, right? I thought of that. Check this channel out. You know, the name of the Twitch channel was Leet Lounge Live at the time. And sure enough, the stream had 9 cameras on it. And you can click on the camera and it will change the, like, so the stream was kind of like cut up into like 9 cameras. One of those cameras was big on the screen, and the other ones were kind of like encompassing the edges, like a border. And you click on that, and it puts the screen that you clicked on into the bigger screen.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
Yeah, a visual would help a lot to show this, because, oh, you know what? Okay, here's a perfect example. Because it's available now to most streamers, or maybe partnered streamers on Twitch, where you could have a multi-stream, I think it's called.
I think it's multi-stream. I'll check it while you talk about it. Yeah, but
well, I know, like, you can multi-stream for like affiliates too, you know, but squad streaming for partners is what
squad streaming.
Yeah, squad perfect. Streaming. Yeah, squad streaming.
Perfect. Okay, so before squad streaming, there was this, right? So this is like I saw this and I was like, oh my goodness, how are they doing this? This is amazing. But also, like, when I was watching the stream, there was a one Jace Hall on the screen and a one Jennifer Zhang on the screen, and they were both playing Injustice. Injustice 1 had just dropped that day, I think, and they were playing it for the first time. I had never met these guys. I didn't know anything about Jace or Jennifer. But their competitiveness, their banter, their smack talk while they were playing this game captivated me, and I was very interested. But also I was very interested in the technology, so I stuck around, and they had started bringing in celebrity guests on the screen, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. Like, who are these people? I didn't know much about them. And I was there every day. At that point, I never went back to the RP channel that I was watching before. And I was there at the Leet Lounge Live every single day from that point on. And people would come in there, and they would ask for help. They would ask questions. A lot of the times, the hosts were busy hosting, or the celebrity that was on was busy, you know, communicating, and they were doing interviews and stuff like that. So they couldn't interact with the chat very much. They rarely interacted with the chat during those instances. And I was always there helping, you know, voluntarily. I was just helping, you know, answer questions to the chat and, you know, pointing people in the right direction. Eventually, they had a guest. I think it was John DiMaggio or Joe DiMaggio. Is the voice actor for what's the robot guy on what's, you know, the cartoon with the meme from Shut Up Take My Money?
Can't believe
my brain is farting right here because I should know.
Oh my gosh, you're
Futurama.
Yeah.
So he played or he voiced Bender on the show. He also voiced a few other cartoon characters, but I can't remember them right now. But yeah, anyway, they had like over like 5,000 or 6,000 people concurrently watching. And people were like spamming and posting ASCII arts of penises, you know, all kinds of craziness was going on in the chat. Let's, you know, just imagine the 6,000 people in a room and you have no moderation, right? No auto mods at the time, you know, this is like 2013. So it's like just nonstop crap. And Xander Danke, who was also on the show, he was also a producer on the show, was one of the hosts, and he was the only one there. I think he felt overwhelmed with what was going on with chat. Knew that I was always helpful. I was always there. And he gave me moderator access. Now, up until that point, they had never granted mod to anyone. So I was their first moderator. But I think that was done in desperation, to be honest, to be fair.
But you were Johnny on the spot for a reason, though.
Right. Let's be fair. They really made a great decision in doing that, because had they choose someone else, maybe things would have been different. But like, they chose the best candidate, and maybe they should have moderated me before that. It doesn't matter. Like, push came to shove, I got moderator access, and you know, I did my job very diligently. I took it very seriously. And I was their first moderator. At that point, like, I was there every day, you know. I started to befriend the hosts, and was just like very helpful and just a part of the show in a way, you know, but not really. I was, you know, just this moderator, but I was still helping with the show. And when they would have guests, they had questions. I always had links for the guests. I always had answers for these questions. Like, I was so prepared that I think I had more preparation than a lot of the preparation that they had for just for the interactivity, because you know the chat's going to have questions and you know the chat's going to, you know. So I had like copy pasta stuff, spreadsheets, everything. It's like ready. You had a moderator, like status 100%, like, you know, and I did that every day for a while. Even still, like, you know, holding down a full-time job, I would leave work, come straight home, jump on. Since I worked in New York and they were based in California, it worked even better because they wouldn't start the shows until like 3 p.m. Pacific. And for me in the East Coast, that was 6 p.m. So it was just in time when I got home from work, I could jump on and be ready for all the moderating duties that I had until like 1 or 2 in the morning, you know. And I would like stay up, you know, sometimes getting like 2 or 3 hours of sleep every day. And I was just doing that. I just loved these guys. Eventually, Jace Hall, who was in charge of the Elite Lounge Live, had come into possession of Twin Galaxies. I don't know like all the story behind this, because, you know, I'm not really a part of that process or whatever. But I was there when it happened, and I think Jace had an idea of, why don't we take the Elite Lounge Live and merge it with Twin Galaxies.
Mom,
Mom! Get the camera! I gotta kill! Oh my, gotta kill! Oh yeah, baby! Oh, mommy, I gotta kill! Finally, after 250 games sitting in a corner undying to the gas!